You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
Today's program was brought to you by Roth Cheese, a pioneer in the U.S. specialty cheese movement. For more information, visit rothcheese.com.
Meat and Three is Heritage Radio Network's weekly food news roundup. This week on Meat and Three, we're bringing you highlights from Feast Portland, like our chat with the one and only Andrew Zimmern.
I'm super excited to be here because for people who do what I do for a living, we do tons of, you know, desk side chats and podcasts and interviews and stuff like that. And you circle the handful of ones in a year where you get to talk with people that you're really excited about talking with. So this is awesome.
We picked up on some recurring themes while talking to our impressive roster of guests, including the current state of Portland's food scene, personal identity, and believe it or not, the influence of great chefs' grandmothers.
Meemaw never touched a drop of booze in her life and now has a distillery named after her. But I grew up in her garden and just really, she taught me all good things come from scratch and women can be anyone they want to be.
So tune in for this week's extra special episode. Subscribe to Meat and Three wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello and welcome to Why Food. Hi, Jenny. I tried to say hello several times. I'm just so eager to talk to all of you today. I'm Ethan Frisch, your co-host.
I'm Jenny Dorsey.
And you're listening to Why Food, a podcast about innovators, entrepreneurs, career changers, all of the cool, weird, adventurous, exciting people who make major changes in their lives to work in food. And we have an amazing guest this week. We always have an amazing guest, but we have an amazing guest this week, not surprisingly. Her name is Dana Pollack. She is the founder and CEO of Dana's Bakery.
Hello, everyone.
Well, Dana has had a fascinating career from photos, to being the photo editor of a muscle magazine, we can talk about that in just a second, to going to culinary school for pastry, starting her own bakery, which has now expanded to two locations and ships nationwide, and has been listed for some crazy awards, which we'll get into.
Thank you.
In just a second, but thank you so much for being here today.
Thanks for having me, guys. So fun.
So let's start with the transition, the moment where you were in your office at Muscle and Fitness Magazine,
yes.
And you were like, "Screw this! I'm going to do something else."
Yeah, I was literally sitting in my cubicle and I was staring at my computer screen, which had photos of men and Speedos and body oil, and I was like, am I really going to do this for the rest of my life, you know? And I just decided it was time to make a change. I'd always loved baking. I was like, what am I passionate about? What do I love to do? And I was thinking about how I really stress, and that would be to bake, or when I would come home, I would always bake, or I'd love to entertain. So that's kind of the direction I went in. Yeah.
And when you decided that you wanted to go into baking, or what was the first step? For a lot of people, it's business plans, but you had an idea. How did you run with it?
I've always been really trigger happy. So for me, it was just about what am I going to do and how am I going to go about doing this the right way? So I wasn't even really thinking about a business at the time. I just knew that I wanted to, you know, pursue the passion, and I had known that it was baking. So I didn't want to quit my job and my career that I had gone to school for and worked for, you know, 10 plus years. And just bake cakes for friends out of my apartment. I wanted to get formal training, and I wanted to, you know, really just understand the culture and get some skills, learn a trade, shall we say. So I found a culinary school, ICE, Institute of Culinary Education, and I enrolled. And then within 2 weeks' time, I quit my job, and I knew that that's what I was going to do. I didn't know what I was going to do with it. I just knew that that's something that I wanted to learn, and I wanted to kind of see where it went.
Had you been much of a baker before that?
Yeah, I'd always loved to bake, and I'd always kind of put my spin on things. So I would I'd stuck to like cookies and cakes and brownies, and I would always find a way to put my spin on it, whether it was a recipe and I would add something to it, or I'd make it all sorts of crazy colors. But I didn't know how to do, creme brulee. I didn't understand knife skills. I didn't understand bread, pâte à choux, all of these different things I learned in culinary school. So cheese, that was a big part of it. So cheese and lots of butter and, all that kind of stuff. So that's really why I wanted the formal training.
And what does Dana's Bakery look like today? We'll fill in the blank in a minute, but let's bring everybody up to speed on what Dana's Bakery is.
So Dana's Bakery is an online bakery. We are a national brand, so we ship to your front door from our website. We specialize in French macaroons and fun American flavors. But now that we've expanded the product line, I guess we do more than just macaroons. So we have a whole line of desserts. Everything is gluten-free and kosher. We ship nationwide, and we have a location inside Dylan's Candy Bar on the Upper East Side and another one that we most recently opened in Williamsburg, Brooklyn, in the North Third Market.
So there's macaroons are hard to make. They're not exactly your, beginner pastry. Right. So can you tell us what you're looking for in a well-composed, well-made macaroon, and how were you able to get to that perfect recipe?
So it took me a while to recipe test when I created the recipe. I was looking at what everyone else was doing, and then I kind of made my own hybrid. So macaroons by nature are really sweet, and the flavor profiles are really sweet. So for me, when I made the recipe, I chose to make a little bit more almond flour, a little less sugar, because it's still sweet enough as it is. So that's been really successful for us. And then it's just about taking that blank slate and turning it into all the different flavors. So I love candy, so I would always try to infuse candy inside the macaroons. Like we have the candy corn macaroon for October. So we, put it in the buttercream, we shove one in the middle, and we always try to put it in the shell if we can. Sometimes we can, sometimes we can't. But, getting that recipe right was a process, but I think that I have a good one, and we just kind of do different adaptations from there.
And how did you decide on this particular dessert to start your business?
So macaroons are gorgeous, and I really fell in love with them when I was in culinary school. This was 7 years ago, and at the time, they were becoming more popular in the States. But even though I was finding them in different cafes and different bakeries, it was the same flavors. Lavender, rose, pistachio. And I didn't understand why people weren't putting an American twist on it. So like I've really done my whole life with my out-of-the-box baking. I was like, well, how am I going to make this mine? And I saw that there was a market that no one was touching, and they were making these French macaroons and really fun American flavors. So that's how the concept was born.
I have a really important question.
Yeah, sure.
Why do you pronounce macaroon the way that you do, or what's the correct way to pronounce?
Sure. So I am from New Jersey. I'm not from France, and I'm not going to pretend that I speak French. So some people can say macaron, and I can do it well, but I say macaroon because it is a macaroon. I think that the biggest difference is with the spelling. Two O's are the coconut macaroons that you eat at Passover. Mm-hmm. One O is the French macaroon that we make, and it's made with almond flour, egg whites, and sugar. So they're similar but very different, and I think that you can say it either way as long as you spell it correctly. I think that's really what it comes down to.
When you started making these, and then you wanted to start growing your business, you just wanted to start growing your brand as well, one of the things you started doing was kind of taking your photo editor approach to photographing your desserts, making the macarons look a particular way, very different from those kind of like pastel, French-inspired.
Soft, out of focus.
Yeah. Can you talk about that process and how you were able to kind of pinpoint that?
Sure. So for me, I'm just not into the pastel, soft, out of focus food photography. You know, before Muscle and Fitness, I was working at a few food magazines and I would do some food styling. So I really understood, the logic behind photography and food and what goes into it. And I just wanted to, we were making all of our macaroons in these really fun flavors and these really bold and beautiful colors and all this design. I wanted to, shoot them like I would a sexy bottle of perfume in a still life shoot. I didn't want to make them soft and out of focus how everyone else was, photographing food. It wasn't really my thing, and I just kind of stuck to my guns and shot them the way that I'd want to see them. And also what I knew how to do. I mean, that was what I had done for many years being a photo editor and being a photographer going to school for photo. I went to school at Parsons for photography. So I just, you know, really liked high contrast lighting. Soft and out of focus wasn't really my thing.
Did you ever think about doing a collab with like Hot Dudes and Speedos with the Macaroons?
You know, maybe I'll do that just for you. Maybe we'll put together a calendar. And,
I would
and you can be what you were December, your birthday. You can be December. Ethan will be December. It's perfect.
I'm going to be behind a pile of Macaroons.
That's yeah. We're casting models after this. Anyone wants to come.
And what do you think that photography style conveyed to your, especially your early customers, convincing them to take a chance on a brand that they'd never heard of, a flavor of macaroon that they'd never tried before?
Or a macaroon they don't even know what it is.
Yeah, exactly.
I think because of social media, we were really able to spread the word. And I always say that a huge part of our success and our growth is because of social media. It's a free platform. It's a free tool that you can use. And it gives you access to people across the country, across the world, really. So because I took these photos and they stood out and people hadn't seen photos or food photographed in this way, they became really interested in the product. And if they didn't know what a macaroon was, they knew what red velvet or s'mores was. So they were willing to give it a shot. And people were asking for shipping. How do you ship? When can I get them? Where are you located?
You were like, I take it on the subway to you.
Yeah. At that time, you know, it was just me and one other employee that I had poached from culinary school. And we were in a small test kitchen in New Jersey, renting a couple hours a week, and I would make them, because I live in the city, so I would go to New Jersey, I would make them, I would bring them back, and I would hand deliver them on the subway, in a taxi cab, by foot. It wasn't really sustainable, wasn't the best business plan. There was no business plan, but it wasn't the best way to go about it. So when people started asking for nationwide shipping, I had to figure out the logistics of shipping. I had to figure out how to get a mold made. I mean, I didn't even know to make a mold. I just put them in a Dana's. I spent all this money making a Dana's Bakery box, not realizing I needed a clamshell. Mm-hmm. I shipped them and they would break. So lesson learned. Then I had to invest in getting a clamshell made. Then I had to shop it around to get the best price. Then I had to realize that one material worked best than the other, and you need to have it arrive within 2 days or else they won't be edible by the time they get to you. And then who do you ship with? UPS, FedEx, USPS. I mean, there's all these things that took years to figure out just from trial and error, and I got there. We're always constantly fixing it to make it better, but we've got the shipping down. Hopefully at this point, 7 years later, the bulk of our business, we've got it down.
Who do you ship with?
So we, that's a great question. currently UPS, but we always go back and forth between the two. FedEx, UPS.
It's a
FedEx,
tough one.
UPS. Yeah, it's a tough one, and it changes.
Well, when you first started, you rented a test kitchen, which your mom helped you find.
Right. Hi, Mom.
she was like your number one supporter who helped you through that. Can you talk about the process of like the trial and error for the both of you as you set up your LLC? Neither of you had done any of this before. How were you able to navigate that? And also for a lot of people who have maybe done business plans or written more down but haven't been able to actually get started, right, what do you think is... Yeah, what is the thing that prevents them from like actually taking that first step?
I think that so many people get stuck on making the business plan that they spend so much time in that tunnel that they could actively be working on their business. So I think, you know, get off the paper and start building your business. I think that you should, of course, write down your goals and you should have a plan, and you can plan what your initial goals are and what the steps should be for the next year or two. But I think people that spend months building a business plan, they could have spent months actively growing their business and laying the bricks down one by one. And, you know, they could get somewhere a lot quicker. But, you know, my mom and I really just Google, you know, how do you start a business? How do you set up an LLC? It's really just one step at a time. Yep. And my mom set up the LLC for me while I was recipe testing and still in culinary school. So she was really helpful in the beginning stages of that. And we were both totally clueless on how to do it. I mean, we know more now, but just Google.
And as you started expanding and scaling up, how were you able to kind of get over those humps of now we need more space, now we need to move to a new building, now we actually need to build out our own space?
I think that as soon as you start to get comfy, you know, I found that as soon as I started to get comfortable, then I was pushed out of my comfort zone because something happened. And I've now realized that that's just called growth and it's a good thing. But I think, you know, for me, it was like we would grow, I would hire people, we grew again, And then I had to figure out HR, or I had to figure out why the shipping wasn't working. And, you know, you just have to figure it out one step at a time. So that guy in the other room was waving at me, and I got sidetracked, and I totally don't remember your question. I just like to say that we're in this amazing little cabin, and we are facing the restaurant so everyone can see us.
Our recording studio is in Roberta's.
And you guys have side profile, but I'm literally
facing
them.
Yeah, you're front and center.
So this guy just walked in and he started waving, and I completely lost my train of thought. So if you want to just tell me that question one more time, I can probably give you the right answer.
No, I think you answered it. You're
okay.
Let's talk about some of your flavors. What are some of your favorites? What have been the big hits? What have been the ones that haven't worked as well as you hoped they would?
So, you know, we have the same 12 flavors, or 11, because we have a flavor of the month. But we have the same 11 flavors that we started with from the very beginning. S'mores, fruity cereal, which is made with fruity pebbles, birthday cake, which has glitter on it, and it's tie-dye, red velvet, chocolate molten, peanut butter and jelly. There's so many. Was the one that I was saying, Boston Cream and Malomac were two that I was surprised did as well as they did. Malomac is basically a Malamar with a macaroon shell. And then we hand make the marshmallow and we dip it in chocolate. So that's killer. Boston Cream is Boston Cream, and it's got chocolate dipped on top, and it's like tripping down the side. So those are flavors of the month that we bring back. We try to do it once a year because people really like them. And Malomac just kind of blew up and got a lot of press, and there's like a wait list for it. People love it. So those are ones that surprised me that we brought on in addition to our regular flavors. And then ones that were not so successful. So I tried to make a Doritos macaroon because I love Doritos.
I love Doritos.
So do I. But by the time I actually got it right, I was so grossed out by it that I was like, if I'm grossed out and I love Doritos, like I could polish off a bag in one sitting, like the big bags, then this probably won't do well if I take it to mass market. So
you were grossed out because you'd eaten so many Doritos in the making of the macaroon?
No, it was because we are gluten-free and kosher, so Doritos are not kosher. So I had to recreate Dorito. We had to do Cool Ranch because the other one, the cheese nacho, spicy nacho, that all has cheese in it. So I did Cool Ranch, and I had to basically recreate the seasoning because I couldn't use actual Doritos. If I could have just like ground up Doritos and put it in the shell and put it in the filling, it would have been a no-brainer. But it was like sweet, and because it's a macaroon. And by the time I got it right, I was like, I was just too grossed out by it that I just didn't think that it would be a success. But maybe one day, if you guys think that I should bring the Doritos macaroon back, let me know and maybe we'll try it.
A limited run and see what people
think. We'll do a vote for sure. Yeah.
I also want to talk about the fact that one of your new things that you're selling, the Mookie, is a macaroon and a cookie. And it was actually a suggestion on social media. So can you tell us how that happened?
So when I was opening up our Mac Bar inside Dylan's Candy Bar, you know, it's a great platform. Having a location is a great platform to try a new product, to see if it works. Because when I sell something on our website, it's not that easy. It's just throwing it up and shipping it out. If you have a physical store, you can make a small run. You can test it. You don't have to worry about the logistics of shipping. You don't have to worry about photography. You don't have to worry about packaging. You don't have to worry about so many things. You can just kind of try it in person, and if it doesn't work, you don't make it again, or you give it away as samples, or what, you know, whatever it is. But I did an Instagram contest saying we're opening inside Dylan's Candy Bar. What are some things that we should sell? And it was a contest, and we would pick the winner, and whoever the winner was, we would make their product. And someone said, shove a macaroon inside a cookie, and my mind exploded, and I was like, that's the best idea ever. So then we did a vote on what to call it, and it was the Mookie, Mac plus cookie, Mookie. And it's been doing really well for us.
How do you make it?
So we use our own flour blend. So I used to make this cookie called a cakey, and it was a mix between a cake and a cookie because I like a really big cakey cookie. I don't like the thin, crunchy ones. And I was going to, when I was in culinary school and open up the bakery, I was originally going to make the cakeys. And then I saw the market for the macaroon, and it was kind of, you know, this untapped market with the flavor. So I decided to go in that direction. But I had this great recipe. So I was like, this is perfect. But I couldn't use it because it's made with gluten. And gluten-free flours, you know, they just don't taste good, and they have a really gritty texture, and they get stuck in your teeth. And so I had been working on this recipe for 2 years. So we almost had it Right. And then when someone suggested the Mookie, it was like the perfect opportunity to kind of fine tune it and then actually bring it onto the menu. So it's a mix between potato and rice flour. And it's great. They're really good.
What kinds of flavors are you doing?
So now we have cookies and Mookies, and we have the rainbow black and white cookies. I know this a lot, but the Mookie is that
a rainbow, like an Italian rainbow cookie?
It's
with
not
black and white.
I could technically, there's no almond flour in it. So rainbow black and rainbow cookies are really, marzipan. It's like an almond cake with the jam.
Yeah.
I could technically do a layer of jam and put a little bit of almond in there to make it. And that's something I could do one day, but right now it's aesthetically, it's a classic true New York black and white cookie, except it's gluten-free and it tastes good and it's got a facelift and it's rainbow.
It's rainbow.
So it's just really
pretty.
You
kind of break it open and...
And it's just like, everyone freaks out. And they're like, oh my God, this is the coolest thing I've ever seen. But the Mookie is the flavor. So my favorite is the classic chocolate chip, and it's got different sized chunks in there, like chocolate chunks. And then there's a chocolate molten macaroon in the middle. Second most popular is the Funfetti, which is a Funfetti sugar cookie with a birthday cake macaroon in the middle.
And then
Red Velvet has a Red Velvet mac in the middle. We have a double chocolate with a s'mores. And then the most underrated one, which is one of my favorites, is peanut butter and jelly. So it's this really, I hate this word, but moist, amazing peanut butter cookie. And it has a raspberry jam macaroon in the middle.
Amazing.
So they're all really good. Did I not send you guys some? You didn't try it?
We didn't. No.
Oh, well don't worry. What? I've got you covered. Yeah. A package coming your way. But yeah, so that's the Mookie. And then I started making cookies because some people didn't want, they couldn't eat nuts, or they didn't want something as extravagant as a Mookie. So we created cookies. It's the same base, just doesn't have the macaroon in the middle. And we have the classic chocolate chip, the Funfetti, but then we have Fluffernutter. So it's peanut butter with marshmallow, cookies and cream, and then oatmeal chocolate raisin, which is like to die. So good.
A lot of your business now is retail, but it was not always retail. Right. It used to be a lot of wholesale. Can you kind of walk us through that transition, how you started doing more wholesale, and now where you are and how you made that flip?
Sure. So when I started the bakery, you know, the wholesale accounts were the ones that helped me grow and keep the lights on. That was steady business that I knew would come in every month. And at the time, it was about 70% wholesale and 30% online sales. But then I shortly realized that, you know, I was just putting as much effort and time and cost into making the product, but I was making a fraction of the money.
Yep.
So I was like, okay, this isn't sustainable. It wasn't the type of business that I wanted to really be focusing on. So I decided to make the switch, and it took about a year and a half to really make that happen. And with the switch, I decided to stay with some of the wholesale partners that we had been with from the very beginning that I had great relationships with. So we've worked with Dylan's Candy Bar from the very beginning, and we still have a great relationship with them, and we're in all their locations nationwide, and now we have a physical store inside their store, their flagship in the city. But Dylan's Candy Bar, 1-800-Flowers, Williams-Sonoma, Fresh Direct, Whole Foods, those were brands that I think aligned with us. We had the same demographic. It was just a good fit, so, and they were great clients, so I kept them, and it was the people that were either smaller cafes or coffee shops, or people that we had to chase for money, or, you know, just things that it didn't seem like I necessarily needed them long term. I found a way to, you know, gently and politely just kind of part ways. And, you know, the business is moving in another direction, and if we ever do continue, you know, this wholesale program, I'll definitely be in touch, kind of thing. But I took that money and the time and the resources that I was putting into that extra product for wholesale to invest in building my retail, so my website. So at that point, it was the first time that I started putting spend towards SEO, AdWords, advertising, and that type of stuff.
And that's a fundamentally different business now that you're running. What was it like to make that happen, both to know where you wanted the business to go and then actually to follow those steps to get there?
You know, I didn't have clear steps. Now when I'm saying it, it sounds like it's so simple. And it was like, well, this is what I'm going to do. And I just did that. But it was literally just fumbling and figuring it out. And there was a lot of missteps along the way. I mean, I don't specialize in SEO and I don't specialize in AdWords. So it's hard to, so you hire someone and you expect them to do the job, but it's hard to really manage them and really, you know, understand their success if you don't really understand what they're doing. So I kind of had to learn the hard way about how to look at ROI return of investment, how to look at ROI and how to gauge what people are doing and if it's really successful or not. Now I know a lot more, but then I didn't, and it was all just a learning curve. But I knew that it was something I needed to do because I saw that my team was getting burnt out, and I saw that we were putting all of this time and this energy and all of this money and all this product, but I wasn't making as much money as I did with a simple sale on my website. And, you know, it was obvious to me that, you know, there needed to be a switch. Something had to change.
Was that a hard decision to make?
No. It's scary because it's steady money. So yeah. I knew that, you know, sales might dip on the books. Like, it might look like, you know, we were having less sales or business wasn't doing as well. But I knew that, like, if you gave it a little bit of time, the scale would tip the other direction. And, you know, and luckily it was fine because we were making as much money, if not more, and we didn't have to work as hard. It was a good instinct, and, you know, I'm glad I followed it.
How do you think that connects to kind of bigger trends around people buying food online versus in person, or the sort of shift in the way that we think about sourcing our food, you know, as individuals?
Well, I think that now online bakeries are very common, and I think that everything is very visual. Everything's on Instagram, like the bigger and the grosser, the better. You know, food porn, literally.
Egg yolks and melted cheese.
And the cheese on top of like the everything. But I think that, you know, for me, there's like a recipe to success. It has to look good in order to get people to buy it, because it's not like you're walking into a store and you smell the chocolate chip cookies, which makes you want to purchase. So you're in your home, you could be like in the bathroom, you could be anywhere looking at your phone and looking at this product, but you're not smelling it. So it has to look good in order to get people to want to buy it. And then when they get it, if the presentation is great and it tastes good, they're going to come back for more, recommend it to their friends. It's like a domino effect. So it's really, it's a two-step process for me. And I think that that is success in terms of an online bakery. And these days, everything is, you know, visual, and it's not an actual store that you go to. Now we have a store, but even then it's not my own smells because I'm in Dylan's Candy Bar and it's a candy store. So it's a little bit different. That same thing applies. It has to look good in order to get you to buy it. And then it has to taste good and you'll come back for more. And then, you know, tell your friends.
Okay, well, with that, we're going to take a short break, but when we come back, we will be talking more about investment, hiring, all the goodies.
Please
stay with us.
By Roth Cheese, a pioneer in the U.S. specialty cheese movement. Roth is in its 25th year of making specialty cheese in the rolling hills of southern Wisconsin. With strong Swiss heritage, Roth is best known for its award-winning Alpine-style cheeses under the name Grand Cru. Fresh Wisconsin milk, combined with expertise in affinage, is how Roth creates high-quality, great-tasting cheese year after year. In 2016, hard work paid off when out of over 2,000 contenders, Roth Grand Cru Surchois was named world champion at the World Cheese Championship. For more information, visit rothcheese.com.
Welcome back. I'm Jenny Dorsey. I'm your co-host for Why Food.
I'm Ethan Frisch.
And today we have Dana Pollack, who is the CEO and founder of Dana's Bakery, with us today. We've been talking about everything from scaling up your business, getting started, how to quit your job, even though you have hot dudes apparently in your cubicle.
That sounds so bad.
That sounded came out the wrong way, maybe. But we were just talking about when you were getting started and you started scaling up and you were hiring people, that you needed to maybe manage them, but you weren't totally sure what they were doing SEO wise or marketing wise. Like, for a lot of entrepreneurs who are at a point in their business where they have to shift their focus, whether it's from wholesale to retail or whatever it is, you are definitely hiring people that you're not familiar with and also have a completely different skill set than you. So how have you been able to manage that as you've grown your business to 35 or so employees?
Yeah, I think that you always want to hire the right person. And I think there's a good gut instinct there. But I also think that what I've learned is well, this isn't the answer to your question, but it's a little nugget of something that I learned.
Go, please, yeah.
I think it's important to hire people that are better at things than you are. So, you know, when I'm hiring someone in terms of accounting, or I'm hiring someone in terms of design or SEO or, you know, AdWords, things like that, I want to hire people who are better at things than I am, because then my business isn't going to grow if, you know, I'm the ceiling, right? Yeah. There's only so many things that you can do, and I have my hands in everything, but I'm not pro at everything, that's for sure. So I think when it comes to hiring, so that's the hardest part, hiring great people that care about your business as much as you do, and then retaining them, trying to keep a good culture. You know, I always say that we are nothing without our team. Like, I have an amazing team of people that work with me at Dana's Bakery, and it's really all of our business, and we all care, and we all work really hard, and if I didn't have them, none of this would be here, because I didn't do this all myself. So I think it's, you know, you have to follow your gut. You have to hire the right people for the right job. Well, you try to, but I think that the only thing that you can do is, if you see it's not working, one thing I learned is recognize that and just cut ties, because I've kind of sometimes held on to people a little longer than necessary. But it's like a relationship when you know it's not working. Sometimes it's just not working.
And you've wound up with a mostly female workforce.
Yes, it's true.
Tell us a little bit about your philosophy behind that.
Yeah, so I meet a lot of people, especially women in business, who feel like they can't work or they don't want to work because they didn't go to business school, or they're a mother, or they, you know, feel like they have to be home with their family. And of course, that's all great, and they can, you know, and they should. Do that. But I would like to create a safe place for women to come to who work and can also bring, you know, put food on the table and bring home the bacon. Mm-hmm. And it just kind of has happened that we have a great staff of, you know, 35 employees and a ton of mothers. And, you know, we just get it. We get each other. It's a nice atmosphere. Everyone works hard, but we play hard and we have a lot of fun. And I just like to create that space where it's okay, and like, you can have your cake and eat it too in that instance. Yeah.
What advice do you have for entrepreneurs? I mean, as you kind of said, you follow your instinct, you're a little trigger happy, but there's definitely people who are hesitant, to say the least.
Right.
And they seek out advice, and they're always, like, advice for them to get started, for the moms who are nervous, all of that.
I mean, I say just do it, you know, meet as many people as you can, talk to as many people as you can. If you have an idea, I think that it's harder to, what were we talking about before when I was saying it was harder to, you know, it was something about like your passion. Like, if you're passionate about something and you mm-hmm. really want to do it, I think that that's the hard part. That's not the hard, what was I saying before?
You were saying it's hard to find your passion?
No, that's the easy part.
To actually crank out to 3 a.m. and make it
happen? No, it'll come to me. It'll come to me. But I would say you should just do it. You know, if you didn't try, you don't know. And I think that if you're passionate about it and the drive is there, you can make it happen. You don't have to go to business school. I never went to business school. You have a family at home. You have other things going on. When there's a will, there's a way. You find a way to make it happen. You know, even if you have that 9-to-5 job, if you're passionate enough about it and you have the drive, you'll be working when you get home until 1 o'clock in the morning, but you don't care because you're passionate about it. And I think that that's the big thing. I think that a lot of people say that they want to own a business and they want to have their own business, but when push comes to shove, maybe the passion's not really there and you're not able to really do it in the end because it's hard work. It's not for everybody. And I think that if it was easy, everyone would do it.
Yeah. It's a luxury to be told what to do.
Yeah. Well, it's, yeah, I don't know. You get asked a lot as an entrepreneur, or commented, it must be nice to be your own boss. I find that I'm more often my own employee than my own boss, and I'm generally not a very good employee. I'm always annoyed at myself because I'm never getting done what I want me to get done.
Never good enough.
Right,
your
exactly.
Your own worst credit.
Exactly.
Yes.
Let's talk a little bit about business school, because I know you have some feelings about that. I did not go to business school. Jenny did.
Oh.
So, what
I should let you two take this. No, I think business school is great if you have the time and you're able to do it. But I think that, you know, the school of hard knocks, you just like culinary school, you yep. can learn so much in culinary school, but you really learn the most being out in the field and getting that firsthand experience. So like I said earlier, you know, you can spend all this time writing a business plan, but that 6 months to a year that you spent writing things on paper, you could have been actively working on your business, because by the time you finish the plan's changed and it's kind of obsolete. A business plan is not written in stone. It's a moving, breathing document. And I think that it's great to have some things down so that you stay on course and you have some benchmarks. But I don't think that should be your Bible and your like end all be all.
One of the things that people do talk about a lot on business plans is finding investment, right, which you have not taken on any investments. You've bootstrapped everything. Can you talk about that process, your decision to do so?
Sure. I just think when I started small and very humble. And, you know, as we grew, I wasn't even sure if it was going to last or take off. Mm-hmm. And as we grew, I just kept on investing everything into the business. So, you know, when we talk about the switch between wholesale and retail, and, you know, I could take those funds that I saved from not cranking out all of these macaroons for wholesale, I could put that money towards some of these advertising efforts and initiatives to build my website. You know, there's only so much money in the pot. So it's either going, you know, to the left or it's going to the right. So for me, I think I've just had to be really smart. And I've definitely made mistakes along the way. I think that, you know, we've been lucky that we've had, you know, some success and we've grown and I've been able to grow the business this way. I think at some point, you know, they'll come for a time. Sure, if someone wanted to give me, you know, millions of dollars, I could find great things to do with it. I have a million things I would love to do with a cash infusion. However, if I were to take on a partner, it would have to be the right partner. It's more strategic than it is financial for me. And I haven't found the right people to do that with yet. And that's something I'm always looking for. I'll always take a meeting. I'll always meet with people. I'll always chat with people. You know, just because I think that it's good to create those relationships, but I haven't taken on investment because I just haven't found the right partners. It's more strategic.
There are often questions around growth, right? Growth mm-hmm. and investment. You bring in an investor, you grow faster, right. You dominate some segment of the market, whether you're actually doing that or not. But that's
not
often
always.
The description.
It could always bite you in the ass. Yeah. You know, you could grow, but not the right way, or you burn out.
So that was exactly going to be my question, right? So how do you feel like that has changed the way that you grow, or the approach, bootstrapping as an approach? How has that supported you in building the business in certain ways?
I think it might take me 2 years to get somewhere, that it could take someone with 6 months if they had, you know, if they were in a different financial situation, but we're doing okay. We're doing it, you know. I think that it helps keep me in check. You know, I know that if I want to do this, I need to work to get there, and I'm realistic about what I want to do, and then I definitely have my goals. There's definitely things that I want to do, and some of these things happen sooner, some of them will happen later, but I think that that's just business and learning, and it's just a part of the process.
One of the questions we had from our Instagram for you was about this. How did you grow the business when you first started? We talked a little bit about Instagram. We talked about moving over to content marketing with your dollars. But yeah, can you walk us through how you approach that and how you are also able to utilize that so you could actually grow it beyond just, you know, an Instagram brand?
So I tell everyone, utilize your network. Look at what's available to you that you don't have to put any dollars behind first and foremost, because especially if you don't have investment, or even if you have investment, you want to be smart about what you're doing with your money. And there's so many great free resources, you know, social media being one of them. For me, it's a great platform because I'm able to reach a worldwide audience, but I also have a direct line to people who follow us and customers. So I get great suggestions. I get feedback. They're very free to tell me what they like and what they don't like. It's a direct line to them, and I develop a relationship with everybody. So I am very heavily active on Instagram. I run all of our social media platforms, and like the stories, you know, it's mm-hmm. it's basically, the stories are kind of a behind the scenes of what happens in my life with my family at the bakery. It's anything from food to products to what I'm doing during the day, a business trip, bloopers, when things happen at the kitchen. You know, you get to meet everyone at the kitchen, from the front office to fulfillment to production. So it's a really great tool, and it's free, and it helps spread the word, and it helps give you data, and you're able to research through there. And there's so many things that you can get just from this free platform, Facebook, Instagram, all of it. I mean, I'm such a huge advocate.
But at some point, content marketing is not free. when do you know it's time to cross that bridge and like you should invest money into that?
I think you have to be smart about it. So I think what are you trying to do? Are you trying to build your brand? Or are you trying to promote something for holiday? If it's holiday driven around the holidays, put a little money and spend towards promoting your photo or your new product. If you're trying to build your brand, create content that people want to see and then, you know, test what works and what people are, you know, engaging with and what people like and what they don't like. I mean, all the insights on there. So I know, for example, I could do a story, I could post something and then I see that the traffic jumps on my website and I see that I have live active visitors that I didn't have before. I can see, you know, we now are on Shopify. So all of the insight is there. So they make it really easy. You just have to look. And it's foolproof. I mean, it tells you have shopping at checkout, purchased. What cities, what states everyone's coming from. I mean, you have all of this information at your fingertips. Instagram, too, if you have a business account, you get insight about your followers, their locations. I can see that, you know, a certain percentage of my sales or my traffic to my website is driven from Instagram or Twitter or Facebook or my emails. So, I mean, it's all there. You just have to open your eyes and look, and it's pretty self-explanatory. And if you don't know, Google it. You know, I'm sure there's a tutorial somewhere that tells you how to read, you know, the insight that they're giving you.
You've also been using the location-based insights to kind of think about potential new locations for your bakery. Can you tell us perhaps what might be in the cards?
Sure. So, you know, some of our major markets are California, like LA. We have a lot of interest and we do a lot of business with Texas, Chicago, Miami, the tri-state area. So when I think about expansion, and I know that these Mac bars, which is what I like to call the locations, the one in Williamsburg and the one inside Dylan's Candy Bar, those Mac bars do really well for us. So I would and am looking into opening up Mac bars in those other markets because I know that there's a need. And I found out all that information from looking at where my sales were coming from, looking at my engagement, my open rates, you know, for my emails and just the different cities where people are living and where people want macaroons. I know we ship to you, but where do you want a physical store? Mm-hmm. They'll tell you.
And those insights are a little easier to gather as the company grows, as you have more followers, more people reading your emails. How does a newer entrepreneur, or how did you as a newer entrepreneur figure those things out?
Honestly, it just takes time. I mean, how did I get past my first holiday and know what to make without having any history about, you know, now I can make a projection. I know what we did last year, up it by whatever percentage I want to grow and hope that we run out. But the first couple of years, it's not that easy. You don't know. It's all a crapshoot. You just kind of have to be on your toes and you have to think fast and try to be as prepared as possible. It's really impossible to know. You can only, everything the first couple of years of business is a guess. It's the biggest joke, and you know you went to business school. When you make a projection on your business plan, it's such a joke because it's literally just a guess.
Yeah, it's just based on nothing.
It could be an it could be an educated guess from market research that you do, but it's legit a guess. You just need just get through the first couple of years and just have some numbers under your belt.
You have to make it through the first couple of years.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. And I don't know what data were you drawing from or what were you going with your gut? Like, how do you know, or how do you get comfortable with the idea that you don't need to know, you just do things?
I don't really think you have a choice. I mean, I want to know, but how?
Yeah.
There's no numbers. You just have to do it and just like pray that it goes okay.
Yeah.
And now it's a different story. Now I can be very precise. Few surprises. There's always surprises. Sure. Don't get me wrong. But now I have years of data, vase, vase, potato, potato, years of data to really, you know, draw from, so I can make educated guesses. But even so, with this new product line, this is our first holiday with cookies. It's just been macaroons up until now. So now I'm kind of back to the drawing board. I have the experience of previous holidays, so that helps. But I'm still back at the drawing board about, you know, projections and how prepared we should be.
Well, this has been so great. We have a few minutes left, so we'll dive into our quick fire round.
Which we didn't
warn you about. So
no, I
hope
did,
you're ready.
I did,
oh,
I did.
Jenny, damn.
A little.
I always like it when we don't warn you.
I mean, I couldn't prepare. I don't know what the questions are, but well, try.
They're very complicated, challenging very questions.
Okay.
What did you eat for lunch as a kid?
I don't remember. I would just like to say peanut butter and jelly because that's what I like to feed my daughter, Lenny.
Okay, cool.
Cool.
How do you like your eggs in the morning?
I get so grossed out by runny eggs.
Really?
So hard boiled or scrambled dry. Egg whites if I'm being healthy.
If you were to identify yourself with one of your macaroon flavors, which one would it be?
Can I be a hybrid between birthday cake
you can be anything
and
you want.
Fruity cereal? Because I feel like birthday cake is all the pizzazz because it's rainbow and it's glitter, but fruity cereal because it's just so feisty.
Could there be a fruity cereal macaroon on top of like the milk bar soft serve with the cereal?
Sure, let's do it. Yeah.
That would be very delicious. Delish. What if you could learn a new skill overnight or a new trade, what would it be?
So if I would always want to go back to culinary school for savory, but that doesn't count because it's food. I would love to be an interior designer. Mm. I love home interiors and I love looking at other people's homes and the architecture and just the way that they decorate. So for me, I would totally interior design, baby.
How did you design the Mac bars?
Well, I just recently did a rebranding. So I wanted it to kind of be along that aesthetic, but I've always loved herringbone tile and we have our signature purple, you know, fuchsia color. So it was just kind of it all just kind of came together. Maybe I would do a better job if I had a degree in interior design. So my next life.
If you had a superpower, what would it be?
If I had a superpower, I could eat whatever I wanted and not get fat.
Yeah, that's a good
that
superpower.
That would be the best of that
so
or
what,
like
what
the invisible
would you
cloak.
Eat? What's,
I mean, I pretty much eat everything now anyway, but I just have to go to the gym every morning to work it off. Okay. Yeah, life would be so much easier.
Yeah.
What's your favorite thing to make for dinner at home?
So I'm really into pizzas lately.
We just ate some pizza.
I know,
for lunch.
And it was delish. I love this place, by the way.
Roberta's. Shout out to Roberta's.
Yeah, Brandon. I know, that's so funny. Yeah, so pizza. I'm really into making different pizzas. I've never, it's so crazy, I've never made pasta from scratch. I'm dying to make pasta from scratch, and I have the attachment on my KitchenAid and stuff
that.
But I'm like a good fish, like a clean, simple fish, like a pizza.
What does your daughter like to eat?
Everything. She's like her mom. She's not picky. I'm so lucky. She's a great eater. Not picky. She loves salmon. She'll do it all.
How is having it? She's 2 years old.
She just turned two, yeah.
How has having a daughter changed the way that you engage with your business?
It's actually helped me a lot because my time is so much more valuable. So before, it wouldn't really matter, you know, if we didn't finish something or I got home late. But now, you know, I want to make sure I get home so I can see her for an hour before I put her to bed. Or I want to wake up really early to work out because if I go later, I'm going to miss her. So it helps me really manage my time and I'm much more efficient. And I feel like I'm, you know, doing something good for her. Like it's a good role model for her to see, you know, her mom working and, you know, kicking ass every day.
It's funny. You're not the first guest who's said that having a child
has
helpful for the work-life balance.
You
kind of exactly.
have no choice, yeah. You know, so you make the best of it.
Right. So entrepreneurs should all go have children.
Yeah,
so
go for it, guys.
Ethan, you're up.
Yeah, right there.
Well, thank you so much, Dana, for being here. Can you tell our listeners where to find you online and in person?
Sure. So you can find us at danasbakery.com and on all the social platforms, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, at Dana's Bakery. And then we have a location inside Dylan's Candy Bar on the Upper East Side and in the North Third Market on, North Third and Barry. Mm-hmm. And then you can also visit us at our headquarters in South Hackensack, New Jersey, if you ever want. It's 6,000 square feet. It's quite beautiful.
That sounds fun.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. That's where we make everything. So you're always more than welcome to come and pick up there as well.
Amazing.
It smells great. Yeah, it smells cool. Real good.
And thanks for listening. This is Why Food. I'm Ethan Frisch. You can find me via my spice company, Burlap and Barrel, at Burlap and Barrel on Instagram or all the social things.
You can always find me at Chef Jenny Dorsey, and you can find us Why Food at Why Food Podcast on Instagram. If you have questions, things you want to say to Dana, or nominations for other guests you'd like us to bring on, please email us at whyfood@heritageradionetwork.org.
And thanks to the Red Crickets for our theme song, Blind, and our brand new engineer, Noam, for joining us today.
Thank you. See you next week.
Bye, guys.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.